Labs for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
To you live and direct from my subterranean lair. This is the Mystical Spiral Radio, and my name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we all vibrate the same frequency. I got a great guest tonight. He's a buddy and friend of the show. I've been on his show before. He's been on mine once before when we first started. He's Mr. UFO himself. You can find him at conspiracyjournal.com, and you can find all of his amazing books at Amazon. And I want to welcome to Spiral Radio, Mr. UFO, Tim Beckley. How's it going, Tim?
Well, good. You know, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a while, and I know I've heard other people comment on your show, and I know you got a lot of regular listeners out there, and I'm happy to be back and share some more information with you on a whole universe of strange phenomena, not just yeah. UFOs, but the paranormal and synchronicities and a lot more to boot.
Yeah, and everybody, you could find Tim and his show, Exploring the Bizarre, on KCOR Radio. And what night is that again, Tim? Wednesdays?
We're on Thursday night from 10 till midnight Eastern. And if you want to have a lively presentation of it. We also have our own YouTube channel where our friend Peter Bernard, our associate, adds a lot of graphics.
And he really does. He does a great job.
Oh, he does a great job of doing that. And that's Mr. UFO's Secret Files. And go there and subscribe and watch some of the programs. I started that, Rob, I guess a number of years ago, because I was traveling around the country, doing a little bit more traveling in those days than I am now. And I would always take my video camera with me to talk to people and to put all this down in a visual and audio manner. And finally I said, well, heck, I've got all these videos here, interviews that I did with Tom Dongo and Sedona, and just a whole array of things, you know. And I said to myself, well, geez, you know, I'm wasting it like having him here in my file cabinets. I should get him out there and let people, take a look. And I think we're up to about 162 shows shows and videos. We've been to Charles Fort, where he's buried in the rural cemetery in Albany, New York. I mean, we kind of wander out there whenever we can, and we do record the show and put it up there for posterity. You know, after it plays on KCOR on Thursday Live, we put it up on YouTube. So we're excited and we're busy. You know, I think I'm up to the number of books I've published since 1965 that are available are probably closing in on 300 now. I know it's, I think last count was about 279 or so, but there are a few of the older ones that may not be, you know, available, or they're not available under, you know, my imprint. But we keep busy, you know.
And for people, for people that don't know about Tim Beckley, I mean, you're one of the pioneers in ufology.
Shame on them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I've known about you since, you know, probably 20, 30 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, I started this journey. I don't even know really the pinpoint the beginning of it. I lived in a house that we had some poltergeist phenomena, you know, lights going on and off. I had a couple of out-of-body experiences, and I had my first of three major UFO sightings at the age of 10. That would have been around 1957, and I had saved up some money. In those days, Raw, you could put as little as 50 cents a week into a savings account in a bank. Can you believe that? In fact, that's what the schools, you know, they had all the children to do that. Yeah, so
you saved up to start, you saved up to get your first
printing
press. The reason why I don't want to put you up, but the reason why I got you on the show tonight is for your information about the Nazi time travelers.
And, absolutely,
you know, the Nazi, and I really want to get into this because our time is going to go so fast. Yeah,
indeed.
So, and I also have a way that the Men in Black are tying in to this phenomena. And how I feel that even the Nazis sort of, you know, kind of gave up the war in a way and surrendered on the physical plane in this third dimension because they kind of knew that they were going to infiltrate America anyhow in the interdimensional way by having their scientists come over here and infiltrate our system, where I think they were working with this interdimensional technology where if they control people in the soul or on the astral or dream time, whatever you want to call it, then they can manipulate them in the physical plane because dumb down their consciousness, give them this, you know, infiltrate their food and their whole society and make them mind controlled where they're like drones, easily controllable, vibrating at a lower frequency. And I think that the Nazis knew about this, and they were working with this technology. And when they came over with Paperclip, they had their hooks in us and their claws, and they've never left since.
This is absolutely correct. Now, if you trace the history of the interest in the paranormal in Germany, it goes back to around 1919 or 1920. There were quite a number of people, Madame Blavatsky. I mean, Gurdjieff.
There was an immense,
immense interest in this occultism in pre-Nazi Germany, which developed to the a widespread interest among a certain element in society there. And in fact, some of the earliest cases of channeling go back to about 1920. There were there was a group of German spiritualist mediums, eight or nine very attractive women. And they would have the seances at a hunting lodge, and they had an organization called the Vril.
Yeah,
and they would channel beings from apparently light years away. Not only would they go into a trance-like state, but they also developed a system of automatic writing.
Wow. Yeah, and you think that this long hair that they all had, you think that was more like an antenna amplifying
this is what they claim, that short hair was the most popular style in Germany, I guess in Europe, around that time. But they believe that this very very long hair. We're not just talking about, you know, medium length. I mean, we're talking about, you know, waist length. If it were, you know, in the back, they believe that it would act as an antenna for them to more easily pick up, you know, these signals and messages from afar. Anyway, so not only were they channeling this information from a group of space beings light years away, but they also developed a series of drawings or plans for what appears to be some sort of bell-shaped device. Now, it's theorized, and of course, the records on this are scattered, if they even exist at all anymore. Apparently, if you look at some of the blueprints, which I've seen, and if they're actually are the real McCoy, some of these drawings are identical to the vehicles and craft seen by a large number of the early American-style UFO contactees, in particular the bell-shaped and cigar-shaped devices that have were popularized by George Adamski and some of the other contactees from the late 40s and early 1950s. And also, too, not by coincidence, but apparently the space beings that they were able to channel were a race of Aryan humanoids. I mean, the beings that looked exactly like us,
like
Earthlings, yes.
Yeah.
And this is what intrigued Hitler apparently so much. He thought that they were a race of super beings because they have had incredible powers of mental telepathy and levitation and invisibility and the ability to cloud the minds of other humans. And I think actually now you talk about the Men in Black. My belief on that is that people ask me all the time, well, you know, are the Men in Black, the MIBs, are they government agents or are they extraterrestrials? Well, I don't like to use the word extraterrestrial because we're talking a lot. We can't lump all these entities and all this phenomena into one group. It's they're all pretty much interconnected. We're talking about a whole spectrum of reality. Parallel universes, other dimensions, stargates that exist apparently all around us that the scientific community at least now are beginning to peer into. But so we're talking about a lot of different things. You know, when we say UFO, it's not just a physical craft in the sky. In fact, there are some people now who are even having well, we've had Paul Eno. I don't know if you've had him on your show, but he's a researcher from New England. Yeah, and he's a very intelligent fellow as far as all of this goes, and he's been staking out a site, a window area in Pennsylvania, where they have actually seen weird objects in the sky, and they've also had sightings of some sort of big hairy creature. I mean, we call them Bigfoot for lack of a better name, Sasquatch, so forth. And it all seems to be, you know, happening all in one area. And this is what we find out seems to be repeated, is that if one type of phenomena will take place, you're more than likely to find a lot of different things going on in one, you know, particular locale.
Yes.
And this is all over not only the country, but all over the world, you know. For example, I have visited Sedona, Arizona a number of times, you know, out in the Southwest.
Yeah, well, I got a lot to say about that one day.
Oh, okay. And there's a fellow there, Tom Dongo, who's been on our program, and he has a huge collection of UFO pictures, photographs that he's taken, but also what, you know, other people have sent him because he's like the fellow there who's the, you know, the main researcher and collector of information. And it's just unbelievable, just incredible, the things that have happened in that area, from UFO crashes to some of the people having synchronicities. I mean, I've had some just pretty wild things there too that just go beyond the bounds of you know, coincidence.
I think some sort of interdimensional, some kind of portal opened up amongst those red rocks in Sedona, where a lot of these people are even channeling tricksters. They're thinking they're channeling like the prime creator or some kind of, you know, heavenly being, but I think they're being tricked by these tachutonum type lower astral entities that are feeding on their emotions and feeding on their psyche, you know.
Well,
and
I'm always leery about the channeling. Messenger, but the message.
Yes.
Because I mean, you know, you could meet somebody in the street and you could ask them a question, and they could tell you anything that they want, and unless you got a fact checker right there with you, I mean, you have to kind of take their word for it. And all these people who channel information, well, I think a lot of them are well-meaning, and some of them have picked up on, you know, higher sources of information. But a lot of it is kind of just like a chatter, as if you were listening to a ham radio. And, people giving, all kinds of unorganized information and giving their own opinions and things like that. I mean, how are we to assume that the spirits are necessarily more informed than we are? Some of them perhaps maybe because they're in a different time and space continuum than we are, perhaps living in a parallel existence. We're just getting to the point maybe where we might be able to find some way of defining this a little bit better and to discover exactly what the limits to all of this might be.
Okay, let me add now.
Yes.
What I see in what I feel, because we have in my family lore, I come from the Strega background. They're like hereditary shaman from Italy.
Yes.
And see, if you look at the word, first of all, if you look at the word like disaster, right? That means this means having less of, right? Less thereof or less of, right? And then aster means star knowledge of the stars. So disaster means not having knowledge of the stars. So what has happened to our society has truly been a disaster. We've lost our star origins and our star knowledge. And I feel that's what these Nazis have gone on a dedicated mission for back in the 40s, was they were looking for ancient knowledge, ancient star knowledge to gain their grip on the world. And I think they realize that, and people got to realize when they say, like you said, you can't just lump it into a category, Tim. You know, when they say extraterrestrial, I really think they more likely mean interdimensional, because when somebody, I think when these beings, when they're coming from other star systems or other planets, we assume that they're in the physical plane form, like in a third dimension form. But I don't think that's the case. That's why when we see technology going to other planets like Mars or places like that, it looks like a barren landscape. Why? Because I feel that there is only a physical plane, most likely here on Earth, on Gaia, where we experience the five senses. But there's other populations, other places, but they're on other planes of existence that we can't see in this visible light spectrum. They're on other planes. We have this like experimental planet where there's this material realm simulation going, where we apply for some time on Earth to experience the five senses and to experience joy and pain and in everything we do. And I think that the Nazis realize this and realize that if you capture somebody with interdimensional technology, like in their soul, in their astral state, and you're able to hijack them there, then that's truly how to capture them, and capture them and imprint them on their souls. And we have this myth we have this belief in Strega lore of these beings called the Capinera. Now, Capinera basically means black hats or black dressed beings, right? So these beings go back thousands of years to ancient Etruscan time, and the Etruscans even got this these information from the Persians before that, and then the Persians said they got it from a mysterious star people. So this has been handed down from basically the fallen angels or Draco or Seraphim, these beings that came from the sky with this star knowledge, this interdimensional technology that seems like magic to us. You know, just like if we had an iPhone and we went back in time, Tim, it looks like we have a magic wand that knows everything, you know? So I think that certain interdimensional technology seems like magic, and it's used with mantras and activating symbols and codes in the astral form. Just like a computer, when you enter in something, you enter in a password, or you enter in a code, things appear. Things get accomplished. And just like in the astral, when you use ancient sacred geometry, ancient sacred codes, things appear, things manifest. And I think that Hitler and all these Nazi scientists knew this, and that when they came over with Project Paperclip, they had already had contact with these interdimensional entities.
Well yes, and they did. Well, not only that, Rob, but there were a number of crashed UFO cases that were have come to our attention. In fact, Mussolini had set up a project in the I think in 1933.
Really?
After there was a supposed UFO crash that took place on June 13th of this of that year, of a bell-shaped UFO outside of Magenta, Italy. And there are actual documents that we have in our book, The Nazi UFO Time Travelers.
And that's on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. And the Nazi UFO Time Travelers tells about Mussolini's interest in the subject, and even has some of the telegrams and confidential papers that initialed and sent around, and there's some drawings of some of the craft that were seen, and the reports were forwarded to his headquarters. Also, too, around the same time, or maybe a little bit later, there was a supposed UFO crash on the site of a property that was owned by Olga Braun's parents, and apparently Hitler got word of this. Some of the scientists or engineers, perhaps some of the ones that came on over here, as you mentioned, under Project Paperclip, worked on back engineering some sort of device which has become known as the Glocka, which is the bell. Now, the thing about this device was it had a very strong magnetic field to it. And people who came very, very close to it, some of the engineers and people working on the project, would have, I guess the best way to describe it would be hallucinatory effects.
Wow.
And if you go back, and also to the object when it was turned on, powered up, it would also interfere. It had an electromagnetic force that interfered with other devices. You know, just like in the UFO cases where these objects apparently can stall automobiles and cause blackouts and cause people to perhaps believe they've been transported elsewhere, or to have meetings with encounters with humanoid beings. And apparently there is this force field that surrounds the bell, the Glocka, which causes this effect. And it was also used, apparently, maybe accidentally at first, by the Nazi scientists as a time travel device. And so a lot of the early UFO reports in this country here, if you go back and you actually study the material, you'll find that the beings that were seen, of course, were very Aryan, in appearance.
Yeah,
which I think is no coincidence.
No.
In fact, some of them spoke in German. I mean, if there's a case that we report on in the book of a salesman by the name of Reinhold Schmidt, who in the town of Kearney, Nebraska, he was a salesman. I think he was selling grain or something like that. And he was driving home one evening, and this craft landed and a door opened. He was welcome on board the ship, and he noticed that, well, he spoke German, and he noticed that they were speaking in high German.
Wow.
But they claimed on the other hand to be from outer space. Also, too, now, even in the case of George Adamski, and this is something that most people don't realize, and I realize he is a very controversial figure. Some people think he was just making it up as he went along, but I think in the case of a lot of these contactees, a part of what they experienced was legitimate, and then as they went on, if they wanted attention, they would add a little bit of spice to their story, just to get people to come back and listen to their main message. Anyway, in 52 or 53, Adamski had his first meeting with this so-called Venusian being by the name of Orthon. And there were 8 witnesses to the event, so you can't say that he was just making it up.
Yeah.
And one of the things that probably few people realize, you know, Adamski claimed that all his meetings with these extraterrestrials were of a physical nature. He did not push the psychic side of this. But if it wasn't for the psychic side, he would have never apparently had this original experience, because it was George Hunt Williamson, who was there among the 8 witnesses, who used to have telepathic contact. He channeled, and he also received radio messages over his ham radio set from otherworldly beings. And one night while working the Ouija board told the group, the small group of individuals, where they should go to have a UFO encounter. So they followed the Ouija board, and this is where Adamski, you know, based on the information that they got from the spirit world or from the Space Brothers or however you want to identify these beings, they went to this spot, and this is where they saw this object in the distance, and Adamski walked off into the desert, and they could see through binoculars that he was having some sort of meeting with this very human-looking entity. Now, George Hunt Williamson and the group that was with him, with Adamski at that point, they took plaster of Paris cast of the imprint that the aliens' boots made in the soft sand. And if you look at the bottom of the boot, the imprint that's on the bottom of the boot, what do you see on both boots is a swastika.
Wow.
Now, why would an alien from the planet Venus? Now, I know that some people say that, of course, the swastika itself
is a
Hindu or Indian a symbol of power or good luck dating back centuries, centuries. But of course, but of course, it's been totally perverted and so forth. But still, why would somebody from Venus have that on the bottom of their boot? Well, it's funny that they spoke with a German accent, that they've got the swastika on the back of their boot. And lo and behold, George Hunt Williamson, who's written some very great books, like The Road in the Sky. In fact, we've published them. You can find them on Amazon. We've got, like, I think 4 of his titles. He was a member of an organization back in the 1940s that espoused pro-Nazi propaganda. In fact, they put out a publication called Valor, and in this publication, they they actually had channeling messages from fascist sounding UFO entities, and the head of the group, his name was Pelle, was actually put in jail for treason for a number of years. He had a group of what they called the brown shirts. So
one thing you don't want to go to prison for is treason.
Well, I wouldn't think so, especially during a war.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's not a good place to find, you know, yourself. But also too, now, the government always had this, I think, this plan that they didn't want you to believe in UFOs. I think the crash in Roswell was of one of these Nazi built
back
devices. Because where were all these scientists from Project Paperclip doing their rocketry and experimental work in that part of the country?
Yeah.
In fact, they had headquarters there at White Sands, New Mexico, not all that far from Roswell. They were testing all these devices. And so I think that in a lot of cases, even these military guys would be somewhat ashamed to admit that they were actually working with war criminals. I mean, it's kind of like something you wouldn't want to announce. So if you were going to believe in UFOs, which they would rather not have you believe in them, they would rather have you believe that they were from extraterrestrial origin than looking closer, here as a homegrown phenomena of some sort or another. Plus, the earliest pioneering UFO researcher, Major Donald D. Kehoe, he was an assistant to Charles Lindbergh. He had quite a reputation. He was one of the original founders of NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And they were very heavily, their board of directors were made up of all kinds of military personnel or ex-military personnel, including the head of the CIA and Admiral Hillenkoetter. I mean, it was just stocked with people who seemed to have a sort of military reputation for this, and they push extensively ET hypothesis. If the minute that you started talking about entities, or the minute you started talking about UFOs being of an earthly or interdimensional origin, and there were some groups that promoted that theory, even then there was kind of a blending between spiritualism, and there was an organization called the Borderland Sciences Research Associates who saw this as being a very ethereal type of phenomena. They were probably the first to bring out the interdimensional tendencies of a lot of what people
were reporting. We're going to go to our break, Tim, and we're going to pick this up right back where we left off, all right?
Betcha.
Okay, cool. So everybody, you can find my guest, Tim Beckley, and information on Nazi time travelers and all of his amazing books at conspiracyjournal.com. And you can find me, like always, at themysticalspiral.com. You can find me on YouTube at Exploring the Ka with host Ra Castaldo. And it's an amazing Sagittarius full moon. And the song coming up is called Jail Card by Analog Driver. Spiral out.
Let's go. listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we're back. My name is Ra, and this is Spiral Radio, themysticalspiral.com. And my guest is my buddy, Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO himself. And you can find him at conspiracyjournal.com. You can find all of his books at Amazon. And it's an amazing full moon tonight. And we're talking about time travel and the Nazis and how they infiltrated our government with Project Paperclip, and how they were using interdimensional technology, I feel, and how ever since they came over, they've had their hooks in society, dumbing us down, you know, controlling us in our soul time to manipulate us in the physical plane. And, you know, Tim, we talked about Men in Black and how in my lineage they talk about the Capinera, which are basically Men in Black. Now, to get back to that for a minute, and to get back to the description and how much it lines up with some of the description of some of these beings, is that these Capinera were known as time jumpers and time keepers. Any paranormal, any type event that was considered supernatural or out of character, these beings would appear. And they would be time keepers and also time jumpers. And they would – the lore in our lineage is that they're an interdimensional race, you know, on another plane of existence. Mm-hmm. And when they appear in the physical plane, it's only for a short period of time because it's very dense atmosphere for them and it's very heavy. And they can only last here for a short period of time. And they're said to have always been in black. The Capinera means black hats, but always looking like they're a few decades behind. And back in earlier times, they were known to be driving and riding on black horses. And then in later times, now they're seen as black Cadillacs or black cars. So I think these are the same beings. And I think that these Nazi scientists, that they were working with this interdimensional travel where these parallel universes that are past, present, and future all lined up with us simultaneously. You know, we have these barriers of time that they learned how to manipulate. And I feel like these time jumpers might have been going back in time to get artifacts or to bury artifacts or to confuse people or to, you know, some kind of mission. And, you know, they're talked about in Etruscan lore, like I said, Persian lore, and now in our times. And, you know, they're described as you know, even, you know, having like bugged eyes and look like the, you know, they're not able to handle our atmosphere that much. So it lines up with some of the, you know, encounters that we're having in present day. And, you know, these time jumpers or time keepers, they're known to be here to create chaos and confusion, and to not to come here to get riches or to come back in time to get gold or silver or money, but they're here to affect the frequency of humans and to affect and manipulate the expansion of our consciousness and what we know, and to guard our knowledge and to stop us from gaining access to like this the Akashic record or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think that's a pretty fair estimate of the subject. Now, you know that mind control plays an yes. awful big aspect in the UFO phenomena. People, you know, who are abducted or drive by a, you know, near a UFO, find themselves often in a, you know, parallel universe or something. You know, it just seems that their surroundings have totally changed. There was one case that I investigated back in the, I guess it would have been the 1970s. There was a hunter by the name of Carl Higdon, and he had gone out to do some elk hunting one morning. Panel truck, and drove up to a spot where he knew that the elk would be grazing. Now he got out of his vehicle and he had a pretty powerful rifle with him to bring down one of these animals, you know. And he aimed his rifle at one particular elk, and he pulled the trigger, but instead of, you know, the bullet speeding out of the barrel of the gun and impacting the elk, it came out in slow motion.
Whoa.
Now he found all of a sudden everything around him, the birds stopped chirping, the leaves on the trees were not moving anymore. And off in the distance, I would say maybe about 50 yards away, was a craft resting on the ground. Now he described the craft as being cubical. There are not too many UFOs that are said to be square, but this one was pretty cubical, and it was resting on some sort of landing gear. In front of the device, or alongside of it, were one or two humanoid creatures. Now, the best way he was not much of an artist, and if you see his drawings, they kind of look like stick figures, but they're stick figures with spiked hair, like they were one of the early punk rockers or something like that.
Oh,
they
man, it might have been my ancestor.
Well, who knows, right? Yeah, I think I saw them perform at CBGB's or somewhere along the line. But anyway, he found himself inside the craft. Now, the story gets even stranger because the cube that he saw on the ground, he said, was not very large, and the beings were not exceedingly large either. But when he got inside the craft, the dimensions inside the craft were totally different, and the shape was totally different from that of which he had seen while he was outside. And inside the craft, in cages, were several of the elk that had been out there that he was hunting. And they seemed to be, you know, they seemed to be sedated. Anyway, he was taken to somewhere else. He called it another planet, for lack of a better term. He went up into a structure that was akin, he says, to like the Space Needle in Seattle. He could see out outside the structure where he was, and he saw on the ground on some sort of like escalator, like stairs, like you have at the airport where you get on it and you move a little bit faster. Anyway, he said that there were two types of beings there, or people. One of them were these small figures with the spiked hair. And then there were some humans that seemed to be riding this escalator belt as well. He was taken and he stepped onto some sort of device that he said looked like a scale that you would find in a doctor's office. But something was like, you know, a clicking behind it. He knew that they were just doing more than taking his weight. Anyway, when he got back down to when they transported him back, it turned out that the vehicle that he had been driving had been teleported. Well, he actually saw this happen through some sort of opening in the craft, some sort of a port or what have you. I guess the side of the craft was translucent as he was coming back. And he saw his vehicle being teleported from the grassy knoll where it had where he had parked it into a swampy area. Now, it was so deep in the muck and mire that when the sheriff's department finally came out, they had to get two tow trucks and put down some sort of system of logs and chain it up, chain their towing vehicles up to his truck so that they could pull it over the logs back out to the grassy knoll area and out of the swamp. But not only did he have this weird experience, what we call the Oz factor, because we don't really know if he was taken to another planet or if any of this was legitimate, but as proof of his experience, what did he have? They had the bullet casing had been twisted inside out as if it had hit some sort of wall or barrier.
And they have this bullet casing? Like they...
Well, we published photographs of it in my book, Strange Saga, There's a whole chapter on it.
And that's on Amazon, everybody. You can find
it
all.
It is, yeah. And I deliberately priced that book really economically, because this has all of my early articles from the late 1960s and early 1970s. You know, I cut them out and did a paste number on them. My columns from Ray Palmer's Flying Saucers magazine and Search magazine and UFO Report and all.
Fate
anyway,
and all
it, it, yeah. it was a very sensational case, because not only did he have the bullet twisting and the teleporting of the vehicle where the sheriff had to come, but he had burn marks, you know, just like in Close Encounters, George Norrie yeah. when he not George Norrie, but
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay.
Third
yeah.
con-
yeah. Anyway, he had burn marks on his face,
right on his face.
Body.
Yeah.
Okay. And in addition to that, he when they took
George
him to
Norrie.
The hospital, when, yeah. When they took him to the hospital to examine him, and they took some x-rays, right? And they found out that some of the scarred lung tissue that he had before was totally healed. So this to me is one of the most dramatic of so-called UFO abduction cases, where there is actual physical evidence that something happened to this person. Now, like I said, we wrote it up in great detail in one of the early UFO magazines. And if you hunt around for it, you can find it on YouTube on, help me out here, Leonard Nimoy's show was what? In Search Of, right? In Search Of, and there's an episode, maybe
yeah,
if you type it, yeah, if you type in UFO Hunter or something, there's like a 15-minute interview and the whole thing about this particular case. But we don't know where he, you know, he could have gone into some other dimension or another time space continuum. We can't say for sure where these beings were from, but it certainly seems like it was a, you know, a legitimate experience.
Yeah, and I, you know, and going not to change this experience, but going back to what you said earlier about how some of these encounters, especially with the whole Nazi regime being the Aryan, and how a lot of them were blonde and blue-eyed and these light-skinned beings. It's interesting to note that I feel in Project Montauk, the Montauk chair was some of this interdimensional technology that were with these same beings from the Nazis, because even if you look at this, Tim, you know, a lot of the boys chosen for Project Montauk between like 10 years old and maybe the highest at 18, they were usually blonde, blue-eyed, light-skinned boys chosen for that project. And then later on, they just went to every, you know, Italian descent, everything. But they were choosing these light-skinned boys for Project Montauk for that reason, because somehow that DNA is certain, you know, works certain, you know, better with this technology, or just a certain vibration or frequency that's easily resonant. I don't know what it is, but something about those genetics is works with this technology somehow better, because these beings are usually choosing boys with that descent.
Mm-hmm. Well, this I know I've talked
they
to
fit
Peter
the
Moon.
Aryan stereotype.
Yeah, I mean. We've had Peter Moon on our
program.
He's of course publisher. Yeah, Sky. You know, Sky Books, and he's published a whole series of Montauk reports. But you know,
he's a buddy of mine too.
Oh yes, oh he's very very informed on.
You know what? Our friend Maria DeAndrea is friends with him too.
Oh yes, by all means. Well, you know, we had a sort of a strange experience. This new book that I just did, which is The Matrix Control System of Philip K. Dick. Goes into you know, coincidences and things that are not really a coincidence, that are very bizarre, that prove the reality of some sort of parallel dimensions or parallel universes or parallel realms. I was working with Maria many years ago when I had the New York School of Occult Arts and Sciences. She was a top-notch psychic, and she gave lectures and put together workshops, and we had published one or two of her earliest books, one on crystals and the other one was on spells. Very nice lady. We always worked well together. Then she had gotten married, and I mean, she talks about this freely, and we had a little bit of a tiff with her husband, and we discontinued working with her because we did not see eye to eye with what he had in mind is doing as far as her career went. So I hadn't spoken to her in many years. I wasn't mad or anything with her, but there was just no business relationship there anymore. And one day I was reading the newspaper here, the New York Post, and on page 3 at the bottom of the paper, very small little, you know, 2 or 3 paragraphs, like a filler, it said that Maria DeAndrea was killed in an accident in Huntington Beach or whatever town it was in Long Island as she crossed late at night going to a convenience store.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Okay. So I said, that's really a shame. I felt really sad about it because, like I said, she had been a friend. And, that's not a very pleasant way to meet your maker.
Demise.
And one should not be crossing the highway at 2 a.m. to go to 7-Eleven or something like that. Yeah. Okay. So, after a while, I wasn't thinking about it anymore. And I'm talking to Peter Moon on the phone. And one day Peter says to me, oh, by the way, there's somebody who would like to say hello and speak to you. And we don't have really that many friends in common. He's all the way out in Montauk, and I'm in the city here. And I said, oh, who's that, Peter? And he said, Maria DeAndrea. And I said, well, I don't think that that's possible unless she's, communicating from the other side. And I told him that I had, seen this item in the newspaper, and how many, Maria DeAndreas are there, and how many certainly live on, Long Island. And he said, well, it certainly wasn't her because she was just over to the house a couple of days ago. So we got back in touch with each other. We started doing some work together again, and we've published about maybe a dozen or 15 of her latest works, including the most recent, which is on Traveling the Waves of Time. And there's another one on how to use the Aladdin's magical lamp.
Yeah, she said she wants to work with me in the future, so I'll see if that happens.
She's very, very knowledgeable about
I've had her on twice.
Very knowledgeable about all these, subjects. She's more deeply into the occult than I am. I'm more of a paranormal investigator, but she knows the hardcore spells and stuff. She comes from a shamanistic background from Budapest. That's where she, her family and they were kind of steeped in all of this as well. But she's had experiences with out of body travel and going to other dimensions, and she claims that when you're out of the body and you're traveling through space and time, you never know quite who it is that you're going to meet. And that certainly is the case with these UFO beings. Like you say, you have some of them that are Aryan, human looking in appearance. In fact, they've been photographed. If you go to the internet, and we've published these photos in some of our books, and if you type in the name Val Thor or Valiant Thor, you will find a series of photographs that were taken at a UFO convention on the East Coast back in the 1960s. And it was on the property on a farm that was owned by a contactee who since passed away, Howard Menger. And he claimed that these
– Our government too?
Huh?
Didn't he supposedly meet with our government?
Well, yeah. Well, he was an inventor. He kind of a mad scientist type. He had his garage was filled with all kinds of devices that he was working on, and free energy and electromagnetic and what have you. And he once built a craft, which he said took off by itself and flew away, and he had no idea where it went. And eventually he was contacted by the FBI. Apparently it had traveled 200 or 300 miles away and landed somewhere in Pennsylvania. So if Howard Menger's device could do that, from him working on it in his garage, heaven knows what these German, scientists
I'm thinking of someone else then, Tim. I'm thinking Valiant Thor was an alien being that came down. He, like, the guy without no belly button or – He had like no belt.
Well, I don't know about that, but if you look at the photographs, you know, the one how you can tell these Aryan beings, at least the way I describe it, they all look like they stepped off the set of a daytime soap opera.
Yeah. You know, they look really human.
If you see the people
human.
In the daytime soap opera, they're almost perfect. Perfect teeth, perfect eyelashes, perfect, hair, perfect everything. And that's the way that these beings always look. And out of place. I mean, you know, most people don't go to a UFO conference held outdoors on a farm in the country in New Jersey wearing a suit and tie and looking like this. But Valiant Thor did. And there was a fellow by the name, I don't know if you know him or not, Frank Strangis. He passed away a number of years ago, but he wrote a book called Stranger at the Pentagon. And Reverend Frank, he's one of my few minister friends. I could actually say he was a good friend of mine. He used to host pretty much all my UFO conferences. He claimed that he actually had an ongoing series of meetings with this Valiant Thor character who lived inside the Pentagon for 3 years, and that's where he originally had met him. And that's, you know, there's so many strange stories in ufology and in the paranormal that, you know, I never get bored of this. I've done this for 50 years now, Raw, and I don't know as if there's 50 more years ahead of me, but
well, let's hope.
I'll be channeling on your program or tapping on your wall or something like that. You know, that was what the early spiritualists used to do. They would set up a rapping or tapping. I've tried that here recently because we got all this construction going on the street. So I hear all these weird knockings on the wall. I try to set up a code. You know, one for yes, two for no, three for
Still talking to your buddy John Keel, huh?
Well, John Keel was my neighbor. He used to live a couple of blocks from here. You know, so I knew him pretty well, and I guess he was one of the first that kind of turned me on to this, you know, a parallel universe deal. You know, the fact that UFOs, because in the early days we were forced into believing that UFOs.
Yeah, I read his Mothman Prophecy. Yeah. It really, I love that book.
Well, there's also the Trojan Horse, which is very good, and Strange Creatures from Time and Space, or something very similar, to that.
Well, remember, the first time you were on, I told you my dream vision I had of the Mothman and like where it came from, like the Tibetan mountain and the, like manifested. I don't know if you remember me telling you that story, but we'll have to get into that maybe another time too. But we only got like 2 minutes left, so we're gonna give everybody your information one more time, Tim.
Okay.
If you're just joining us, we're with the great Mr. UFO himself.
Get your pen and paper out.
Yeah, write it down.
All right. Well, my email address, this is the best thing to do. Send me an email at MRUFO8, MrUFO8@hotmail.com, and I will send you all kinds of links to our YouTube channel. I'll put you on our mailing list. I'll send you some literature in the mail. We actually still put out a printed literature. Isn't that a rarity these days?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll send you all kinds of links and hook you up with all kinds of stuff. Or you can go to the Conspiracy Journal, .com and subscribe over there. Or if you're really shy, and like most people, just order off of Amazon, because all you have to do is give one click and the book will be in the mail 2 days later, quicker than I could even get to the post office. So you can do that. Just type in Timothy Beckley and or Inner Light Global Communications, and you'll find a bunch of books.
Thank you for coming on with us, Tim. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Raw, you just keep on rocking.
Yep. You can find me at themysticalspiral.com and Tim Beckley at conspiracyjournal.com. Enjoy the full moon out there tonight and be careful. I want to thank my producer, Sarge, everyone at ParaX Radio, and everyone in the chat room, and everybody out there listening on the World Wide Web. Spiral out.